where we've left off, David has been anointed the king now of Judah in the southern area, the southern kingdom. And so at this particular time, Ishbosheth, who was one of Saul's last sons that was alive, he, under Abner, had basically taken up with Ishbosheth. So Abner, who was one of Saul's, you know, warriors, kind of like the leader of his army, had kind of grabbed a hold of Ishbosheth and kind of, you know, made him into, you know, obviously this son of Saul was a weak leader. He was obviously one of the weaker sons, or he would have been out in the war with Saul when he was killed. And so it's kind of one of those things where he's trying to cling on to his position. He doesn't want to lose his position as a leader in the army. He doesn't want to lose this very valued position. So he's kind of taken the northern kingdom and rallied everyone around Ishbosheth, Saul's son, to try to maintain the kingdom for Saul's lineage. And so the kingdom now is divided. And that is something that David did not want to see happen. David was always a man that, you know, would strive for and fight for to keep things together, to keep unity within the Jews. But yet, as we learn, David wasn't the type that would say, I want unity at any cost or peace at any cost, which is kind of what we're seeing going on in the nation of Israel right now. Although, I will tell you this, as I shared with you guys before, that Amir was called back and told to stay in Israel. And the rumor is, there's a rumor that kind of is going around, that not to make any Passover plans. And so that means next month that something could be going down, you know, with Iran. So who knows? So keep your eyes open over there. You know, and we've also heard of even American military, some of the Navy SEALs and different reconnaissance guys that are making their way into Iran secretly. So, you know, keep your eyes on what's happening in about a month or so. So David, though, even though he was a mighty man of war with everyone else, with his own people, he did not want to see them divided. And so David came into Judah, which is the tribe that he is from. You know, he's from the southern kingdom. He came in, and they then recognized him right away. David, we understand God's anointed you to be the king, so we're acknowledging that right now. But the northern kingdom, which is called Israel, which is the 10.5 tribes of the north, you know, that's where Abner tried to keep this thing going. And so that's where we left off. Oh, and don't forget that Abner killed one of his brothers. And so that's kind of been a real interesting underlying something brewing. Asahel was killed by Abner. And so that's brewing beneath the surface. Revenge is brewing. And so it's an interesting thing as to how David comes into the kingdom. He wanted it to be a smooth transition where he just moved in, took over, and, you know, where almost like where God just said, here you go, David, hands it to him on a silver platter, and everything goes smooth, and everyone lives happily ever after. But that's not happening, is it? In fact, we have a bunch of problems happening here. And so this is where we pick it up as we move into chapter 3. Look what it says in chapter 3, verse 1. Now, there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David grew stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker. So as this chapter now begins, it says a long war. It's literally probably a couple of years of tension where Saul's son was not acknowledging David as the king. And really, you know, he was a puppet. Abner was really the guy that was running the show. And so there was just this known tension that existed between the two of them. That Ishbosheth wasn't acknowledging the fact that David was down there. He wasn't wanting to submit. He wasn't wanting to go down and say, okay, David, you're the king. Let's just get this over with. And so David was just patiently waiting. It wasn't really a war per se like we would think. It was more of just something where there was just tension. No one wanted to secede to the other one. And so here's David just saying, you know what? God's already told me what's going to happen. So I'll be patient. But David's patience is starting to grow thin. And so look what David does in this. And remember, it's about a 7-year period of time that David is in Hebron, which is in the southern kingdom of Judah. He's down there, and he's now settled. He's now hanging out. And all of his men, or, you know, his 600 mighty men, they're saying, hey, you know what? This is good. We've finally got our own homes, and everything is good for us. And so they're kind of melting in. And David, at the same time, is doing some other things. Take a look. Now, sons were born to David in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess. His second, Chileab, by Abigail, the widow of Nabal, the Carmelite. Remember those two. The third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmiah, king of Geshur. Now that's an interesting thing. All of a sudden, we're introduced to a woman that we've never met before. What's going on? Well, David is doing what many of the kings of the East were doing at that time and developing harems. He was developing all, you know, he's marrying many different women. So he had two, and if that wasn't enough for one man, all of a sudden he starts marrying other ones. It was obvious that this one was probably some sort of a political marriage because it makes it known to us that she's the daughter of the king of Geshur. The fourth, Adonijah of Haggith. Bummer of a name. So we can't only imagine what she looked like. The fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital. And the sixth, Erethiam, by David's wife, Eglah. And these were born to David in Hebron. So all of a sudden, we begin to get a picture of something going on here. David's starting to collect wives. Now, at first, we look at that, and even though that was something that was going on in the East, many of the kings would, you know, collect wives and have these harems. But interestingly enough, back in Deuteronomy chapter 17, before there was even a king, God told the nation of Israel, he says, you know what, when you get into the land, there's going to be a time that you're going to ask for a king. And when you do, I don't want him to begin to collect wives. I don't want him to collect horses. And David begins this. Now, his son Solomon is going to go absolutely bonkers. I think he has like 600 wives or something like that. And so here we see that polygamy was not to be practiced by the kings. And so it's interesting that David begins that practice, even though technically it was forbidden. And so it's mentioned here, and we're introduced to several of his sons. And so one of the things that we look at and we say, okay, well, what's the deal here then? David is actually kind of disobeying the law of God by collecting wives. And he's having sons by all these different wives. But let me just tell you something. Whenever we disobey the word of God, there's always a consequence. Always. Trust me. Even if we disobey it in light fashion, we were talking about this just the other day, that even within marriages, if we have a husband who won't lead in his family, or a wife that won't let him, however that happens, there's a consequence. That is not God's best for a family. And there will always be difficulty in that family. And here we see David marrying a bunch of ladies, right? Obviously, he's a ladies' man. And I'm going to tell you right now, as we begin to move through 2 Samuel, David is going to suffer the consequence. The boys that are born to him that we just read about, most of these boys are going to be a pain in the neck to David. He's going to suffer the consequences for what he's done here. Trust me. And we'll see it all unravel as we move through the remainder of the book of 2 Samuel. So we set that off to the side. And now it's almost like now it continues on that after all of the 7 years of waiting, you know, to unite the kingdom, it's almost like it's going to happen against David's wishes. Now it was so, verse 6, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner was strengthening his hold on the house of Saul. So He's gaining power by fear and manipulation, where David has already been anointed the king, and he's just kind of hanging out. He's just waiting patiently, saying, Lord, you're going to have to do something here. And Saul had a concubine. Now, this is one of King Saul's women that, and a concubine, you understand, for a king or for a man, they were basically, they lived in and they were taken care of as a wife, but they didn't have the legal rights of a wife. So you had a wife and you had a concubine. So even though they were taken care of and they were provided for and all of that kind of stuff, they didn't have any kind of legal heir, or they weren't financially taken care of when the king dies. But they were definitely a part of the harem of the kings. So this is one of Saul's girls, okay? Her name was Rizpah, and she was the daughter of Ahiah. And so Ishbosheth said to Abner, Abner, why have you gone into my father's concubine? In other words, hey, you had sex with one of my dad's girls. Then Abner became very angry at the words of Ishbosheth, and he said, what, am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? You know, to say that you're a dog's head was literally one of the lowest things you could say. And he said, today I show loyalty to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have not delivered you into the hand of David. And you charge me today with fault concerning this woman? May God do so to Abner and more also, if I do not do for David as the Lord has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan to Beersheba. And he, Ishbosheth, could not answer Abner another word. Why? Because he feared him. So what just happened here? This is interesting. A rumor, it appears, goes around that Abner had slept with one of Saul's harem, a woman in his harem. Now, what we need to understand is during that time, and this is all so stinking crazy when you think about it, really, but when a king dies, all that he has goes to his son, whether it be his oldest son, or in this case here, it goes to his surviving son. Even his harem gets inherited. So this woman belonged to Ishbosheth. Now, you can kind of get this picture that Ishbosheth is kind of a really, he's a weak puppet leader, because he goes and he says, why have you gone into my father's concubine? Really and truly, he said, why? He should have been saying, hey, dude, what's this I hear that you went into one of my girls that I inherited from my dad? But you can tell he doesn't have the chutzpah to confront Abner in that way. So he says it in a different way. And so we see then that this deceased harem, I mean, you know, is one of my girls. I inherited her, and it would be, you're trying to take the power away from me. And so Abner gets all angry. What are you talking about? I can't believe this. I've been faithful to you. I've been faithful to your father. I've been faithful to his friends. And we're squabbling over a woman? What are you talking about here? Now, basically, Abner denies it. So we have one of two ideas. Either he did do it, or he didn't do it. In either case, what this has done is it stirred something up. Abner has been looking at, David is increasing. His military might is increasing. He's watching the northern kingdom decreasing. He's watching Saul's family decreasing. Abner is now starting to look, and he's a player. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing, and he's looking down and he's saying, you know what? We're going to be on the losing team here real soon. So maybe it's time for me to switch gears, to switch allegiance. Maybe it is time for us to, you know, to succeed and hand this thing over to David. But how do we do that and save face? How are we going to pull this off? So maybe he did pull this girl off and sleep with her just to kind of push things a little bit. Or maybe he started a rumor. We really don't know exactly what happened, because it does say that Abner denied it. Abner denies this all the way down. But the bottom line is, he used this occasion, you know, to join the winning side. So in other words, Abner says, well, and besides that, Well, then fine, I'm finished with you. And in fact, I'm going to turn you over to David. Let's just make this thing happen, you little punk. And so he uses it as an occasion to switch allegiance. And so in a crazy sort of way, it's almost as if God is going to use this to bring the two kingdoms together. So it sounds like everything's going together. Everything is going to come together, right? And by the way, just interesting, just something to note, that, you know, when we, as we've talked about, that David is a man in the Spirit. He's a man that is walking in the Spirit. He represents life in the Spirit. Saul always is a picture of the flesh. And so isn't it interesting where it says that, you know, the house of David grew stronger, but the house of Saul grew weaker and weaker. So it's interesting, you know, when the Spirit versus the flesh. If you feed the Spirit, starve the flesh, watch what happens. And that's exactly what is going on right here. God is taking care of David. David is walking in the Spirit, if you will. He's becoming stronger, and that will happen in your life and my life as we do the same thing. You feed the Spirit, watch what happens. More and more of the manifestation of the Spirit of God will take place in our life. The flesh begins to get weaker and it starts to die off. This is one of the things when people say, well, Rob, I need to ask you a question. I'm really battling with this sin or with this habit, whatever that might be. And so they will ask me, how can I stop this habit? And I'll tell them, well, that's really easy, you know. Just feed the Spirit. You walk in the Spirit. No. I mean, I want to know. I mean, you know, how do I deal with this thing? Whatever it might be. I've got, you know, guys that are, or people that are dealing with many different issues. And you see, if we focus on trying to deal with the issue, what are we doing? We focus on the flesh. And that will always cause it to grow. But if you ignore it and you say, and that really goes contrary to our nature, right? Because we want to be able to control it. We want to say, look what I did. But if I tell you, well, just forget about that, set that off to the side. I mean, even in marriage, when you have a marriage problem, people come in and say, hey, Rob, our marriage is really going through a real tough time. Can you help us fix our marriage? I said, nope, I can't help you with that. I don't have the slightest idea how to fix your marriage. But I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to focus all of our attention upon building your relationship with the Lord. We're going to get you to begin to walk closer to the Lord. And we're going to disciple you in the area of your relationship with the Lord. And as a result of us doing that, God will then begin to fix your marriage automatically. You see? Well, but Rob, how do I stop? You know, I've got this problem with pornography, or I've got this problem with my anger, or I've got this problem with, you know, tobacco or whatever it may be. And so how do I deal with it? Well, don't focus on it. You set your attention upon the Lord, and as you feed the Spirit, the flesh begins to, you know, God begins to take care of the flesh. It's just the opposite of what we want. So sometimes people get very upset with me when I tell them I can't fix their problem. But that's not my job, you see. Our job with our brothers and our sisters is to disciple them, to get closer to the Lord. And as that happens, as a natural byproduct, the flesh dies off, you see. But it's contrary to what most churches will teach you. They'll say, well, let's put you into a program on how to stop doing this, or let's put you into this marriage class. But any marriage class that is worth anything, that has any value, it will disciple you on how to get closer to the Lord, you see. And then little tools we can give you in the meantime. Well, back to where we left off. So, Abner gets ticked off. He gets upset. And Ishbosheth can't do anything because he's afraid of Abner. So he's kind of basically a wimp. And so then Abner, now check this out. I want you to tell me what this looks like. Kind of follow along with this. Then Abner sent messengers on his behalf to David, saying, whose is the land? Saying also, make your covenant with me, and indeed my hand shall be with you to bring all Israel to you. So he sends him a message. David, who does this land belong to anyway? You say God's given it to you? All right, let's make a deal. I've got control over the north. I want to give it to you. So what do you say about that? And so David said, good. I'll make a covenant with you. But one thing I require of you, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, or Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. So David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, you give me my wife, Michal, whom I betrothed to myself for 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Ishbosheth then sent and took her from her husband, from Paltiel, the son of Laish. Then her husband went along with her to Bahurim, weeping behind her. So Abner said to him, go, return, get out of here, you little crazy little guy. And so he returned. And so, did you guys just catch what just happened here? Isn't this interesting? So, it's an interesting thing. We have what we just witnessed here is ancient email or instant messages. See? So what just happened? Abner says, I'm going to send a text message. He sends a text down to David and says, hey, buddy, can we work this out? So David sends a messenger back up. He sends him a text back up. And so then he sends a text back to him and says, okay, well, I'm willing to do that. And David says, well, before you do that, I want my girl back. Now, isn't that an interesting thing, you guys? It's been anywhere from 10, you know, estimates are anywhere from 10. If you do the math, it appears to be about almost 17 years. But we don't know exactly when this girl married this guy. But you remember when David was on staff with Saul, and let's go back all the way to David and Goliath. King Saul says, I will give one of my daughters to the one who kills this giant. David comes in, kills the giant. Saul doesn't honor his commitment. Years later, when Saul is trying to kill David because he doesn't like him anymore, he tells David, oh, by the way, David, you remember I promised a daughter to you. Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go up and, you know, get me, I think it was originally, you know, kill 50, I think it was, and bring back 50, you know, foreskins of the Philistine foreskins. And David goes up and he brings them back 100. You remember we discussed that in depth. Kind of a crazy thing to think about. You know, don't do it. Don't do it. All right, I won't go there. I'm not going to go there. I went there once. I better not go there again, okay? So, you know, it's a... Anyway, so he takes the woman, and so just when David is preparing to marry this girl, Saul, in an attempt to humiliate David, takes her and gives her to another man. And so he deals with this disappointment, and that was one of the tests that David had to face. And so now, David then takes off. He has to run for his life from Saul. You know the whole story. So now here it is, anywhere from about, we can estimate, let's just hypothetically, let's just give a worst case scenario. 17 years later, this woman's been married to another man. But yet, technically, she's still David's wife. Because David was betrothed to her, and that can only be broken by a bill of divorce. So technically, legally, she still belongs to David. And so now David is, and remember when it all happened, she loved David. Remember that? And so, now all of a sudden, out of the blue, David says, I'll tell you what, I'll make the deal with you, but I want Michal back. Unfortunately, that's going to come back to bite David later on, because this girl becomes very bitter about this whole deal. Because, I mean, can you imagine, girls? Think about this for a moment. You're married. You're settled in. You've been with your man for 17 years, and all of a sudden, you hear the knock on the door, and there's, you know, armed guards grab you, take you away from your husband. The husband's going, what are you guys doing? She belongs to David. Get her back over here. This is over. And away you go to the man that, you know, you've already long forgot. And so here, David is doing this. Now, this is a fascinating ploy. This shows you how smart David is, because he knows that in the tribe of Benjamin, in the north, they're all kind of Saul's supporters. They're all looking at this. And this is one way that David can, you know, align himself with the Saul supporters by saying, listen, I got one of Saul's daughters. she's my wife. And so they will then kind of, if you will, look at that and say, all right, well, we want to support Saul. And so, you know what, David does have one of Saul's daughters, so it is kind of, if you will, a political way of saying, okay, we can follow you, David, because you haven't completely defaced Saul. So David's a pretty smart cookie. He's a pretty smart guy. But, you know, what he needs another wife for, it's an interesting thing. But he goes and he gets her, and, you know, this will kind of bring, you know, Saul's family now under David. So, interesting move that he makes. And so now, verse 17. Abner had communicated with the elders of Israel, saying, in time past, you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken to David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all their enemies. So now, this is now Abner, if you will, politicking for this move. Abner's now going to his people up in the north saying, hey, gang, you know what? The war's over. It's done. Let's let David have this. God has spoken to David. Let's unite the kingdoms. I am going to lead this. I am going to follow him. And so then, Abner in verse 19 also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin. Now remember, Saul is from the tribe of Benjamin. So this is going to be the hardest nut to crack right there. And so he goes to the tribe of Benjamin, and Abner also went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel and to the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron. And David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. Then Abner said to David, I will arise and go and gather all Israel to my lord the king, and they that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. So Abner now, the emailing and the text messaging is over. Abner now comes down for a face-to-face. And you know, they had to send messengers in the beginning, because Abner wasn't sure how David felt about him. And so Abner finally comes down. He brings an entourage with him. He says, David, listen, I'm ready. I'm going to go up and I'll rally the troops up in the north. They're going to follow my lead. Ishbosheth will come. He will submit to you. We're going to get the nation united together again, bro. This is a good thing. So let's make a deal. They make a covenant. They make a handshake. I won't kill you. You're not going to kill me. It's a deal. And everything is coming together nicely, don't you think? But you remember, we got a problem. Joab's brother was killed by Abner. And so that isn't settled yet. And so meanwhile, we don't see Joab. Now remember, Joab is David's military leader. Abner was Saul's military leader. Abner is now down working the deal with David. It appears that he's trying to say, hey, you know what, bro? You're going to need a good military man. You know, hook me up. Give me a job. I'll take care of you. You take care of me. Joab is probably hearing about this going, what's the deal here? I'm your military man. So both of these guys are really jockeying for their jobs and for security for the future. But we don't see Joab. So where is Joab in this thing? Well, it ain't over yet. Take a look. All looks good on the surface, but beneath it, we got a real problem. At that moment, verse 22, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid, and they had brought much spoil to them. So they went out and, you know, conquered some city, and they came back and they brought in all kinds of loot. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away. And he had gone in peace. Now, it's the second time we've seen that. Now, when Joab, verse 23, and all the troops that were with him had come, they told Joab, saying, Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and he sent him away, and he's gone in peace. Then Joab came to the king, and he said, what have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why is it that you sent him away? And he's already gone. Surely you realize that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you, to know you're going out and you're coming in, and to know all that you are doing. So in other words, Abner comes in and says, Dave, what did you just do here? Don't you understand this was a plot? He's not your friend. He's not on our side. He's one of the enemy. But you see, now Joab is looking out for his job. Think this through. This guy's saying, wait a minute, Abner came down here? You guys cut a deal? What's going on here, David? He's not on our side. I'm the man here. Watch what happens. And when Joab had gone from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, who brought him back from the well of Sirah. But David did not know it. Now, verse 27. These first words are very important to our first comma. Now, when Abner had returned to Hebron, he came back to Hebron. That's the city where David is now ruling from. I'll show you why that's important in just a minute. Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him privately, and there he stabbed him in the stomach so that he died. Why? For the blood of Ashiel, his brother. So what Joab told David, David, what are you talking about? He came down here to deceive you. Now who's the deceiver? Isn't that interesting? And so afterward, when David heard it, he said, oh no, my kingdom and I are guiltless before the Lord forever for the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and all of his father's house. And let there, and now watch David pronounce a curse upon Joab. And let there never fail to be in the house of Joab one who has a discharge or is a leper or who leans on a staff or falls by the sword or who lacks bread. Bummer of a curse. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had killed their brother Asahel at Gibeon. But notice this, in the battle. So a bunch of stuff just happened here that I need to bring you guys into the loop on. First of all, what we need to understand is that Hebron was classified as a city of refuge. Now, this is very important. A city of refuge God established when the nation of Israel came into the land of Canaan and they began to part it out. God established certain cities that they call them cities of refuge. And what that meant was is that if you accidentally killed someone, you could take off running. It's an amazing picture, I'll tell you. You take off running. And if you could, because someone, if you accidentally killed someone, so let's just suppose that, I accidentally killed Joel's brother. So Joel says, I am an avenger of blood. I want to avenge my brother's blood against you, Rob. And, you were practicing your slingshot, and you hit my brother right in the melon, killed him. Okay? So Joel says, I want you to pay for that. So I take off running, and I can run to Hebron. And as soon as I enter into Hebron, Joel cannot touch me until I get a fair trial. And so after my fair trial, then all of a sudden, Joel now understands, okay, well, it was still accidental death, but I still killed him. So Joel still wants to avenge his brother's death. As long as I stay in Hebron, Joel can't touch me. Until the high priest dies, I am literally, technically bound to the city of Hebron or whatever city that I would have run to that was classified as a city of refuge. So as long as I stay there, Joel can't touch me. Now I can go right to the edge of it and go, And Joel says, why don't you come out here and say that, And as soon as if I were to step out, Joel could take me out. He'd kill me, you see. It's a beautiful picture of Jesus. Isn't it radical? that we, the guilty ones that deserve to die, Satan's pointing at us saying, you know, you owe me. We run to Jesus. We can hide in him. Satan can't touch us. But it's also an interesting picture that you depart from him and you're fair game. And so it's a beautiful picture. So why did I tell you that whole story? Hebron was a city of refuge. Abner came into the city of refuge. So technically, we can look at this in one of two ways. Right now, Abner killed Joab and Abishai's brother. Okay? So on one hand, these guys are saying, we want to avenge our brother's death. So the moment that he goes into the city of refuge, they can't kill him. But what's interesting is that Abner leaves the city, and they should have followed him and killed him outside of the city. But it shows a total disrespect for the law of God because they bring him back into the city and they kill him in a city of refuge. Not cool. Secondly, we do have a technical problem here also, because it was only for accidental death. It was only for if you killed someone accidentally. Now you might be saying, yeah, but Rob, you know, Abner killed him on purpose. But here's the deal. It was in a battle. Did you notice that? He killed Ashiel at Gibeon in the battle. So then that then technically removes the Avenger of Blood's ability to go after someone. So we have a couple of things going on here. We have Joab and Abishai are saying, we don't care. That's our brother, and he killed him, and we want revenge. We want to see his blood. Okay, but wait a minute, bro. You can't call yourself an avenger of blood because it wasn't an accidental death, because it was done in a battle. Besides that, the moment that he stepped in Hebron, you can't touch him anyway. So it's an interesting mix of things that are going on here. What really is at the root of this thing? Bitterness. Revenge. I'll get even with you. You killed our brother. So we're going to make you pay for this. It was the last thing we do, even in a battle. And remember what took place is Joab even told, Ashiel to chase him down. He was the guy that had the wheels. Go get him. Tackle him. We'll be right behind you. By the time he gets there, he had already killed him. And if you remember, Joab was saying, dude, don't chase me. I don't want to kill you. I don't want to fight with you. Don't make me have to do this. And so, an interesting thing happens. But Joab and Abishai are filled with bitterness. They're filled with resentment. They want revenge. And this is about ready to cause a disturbance because they do something without David's knowledge. David, what is David trying to do? He's trying to unite the kingdom. These guys now, Abner was on his way back up to the north to sell this idea to the entire northern kingdom. These guys from the southern kingdom kill the guy from the northern kingdom. So the uniting of the kingdom is now on a real, real, you know, delicate edge. And so, and it almost could have appeared because of the fact that Joab was David's military leader, that you wonder if maybe even, you know, at the last moment, you know, before Joab killed him, you might want to even wonder if Abner was thinking that David was behind this. And so David now needs to do something radical so that the people in the north know, I had nothing to do with this. This is not me. So he pronounces this curse upon Joab's house and his family. And interesting also, let me ask you a question. This is not the first time we've heard Abishai's name. Let me remind you of the other time we heard it. You remember when Saul and his whole camp was sleeping in the valley. And David said, hey, anybody want to go with me into, you know, Saul's camp? And Abishai says, I'll go with you. Remember that scene? And so they sneak into the camp, and God had caused a heavy sleep to fall upon all of them, and they were standing there right over Saul, and Abishai said, "Let me poke him with the spear. I'll pin him to the ground. It'll only take one shot. I'll take him out." And David said, "No, you don't, Abishai. We're not going to do that. That's not my nature. That's not my job. When God's ready to take him out, God will take him out." Remember that whole scene? So did Abishai know that David would not approve of something like this? I think so. And so David now is on a real, you know, very delicate thing here. So David is now proving himself to be a mighty political leader. And watch what he does. Verse 31. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes, gird yourselves with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner." Now, it appears that when David pronounced this curse upon Joab, that he didn't do it in front of everyone. So he's going to save Joab's, you know, kind of hide here a little bit. Because look at, Joab is now with him in the funeral procession. So obviously David is saying, "Joab, you jerk, look what you've done." And he doesn't want to make a big public deal out of this because it's a delicate balance. And so he tells him, "Tear your clothes, gird yourselves with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner." And King David followed the coffin. So they buried Abner in Hebron. And the king lifted up his voice, and he wept at the grave of Abner. And all the people wept. And the king sang a lament over Abner, and he said, "Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound." In other words, you know, this wasn't a death that this was a foolish death, but Abner wasn't a fool. Your hands were not bound, nor your feet put in fetters. In other words, you know, kind of to protect his memory, if you will. He's basically building him up. He was, you know, Abner was a great man. He was never captured. He was never a prisoner. He wasn't a foolish fighter. This guy was good. And then he said, "As a man falls before a wicked man, so you fell." That was a shot or a stab against Joab. Because he's basically saying, you got tricked. He was tricked by a wicked man. And that was Joab. And so then all the people wept over him again. And when all the people came to persuade David to eat food, while it was still day, David took an oath saying, "God do so to me and more also, if I taste bread or anything else until the sun goes down." Now all the people took note of it, and it pleased them, since whatever the king did pleased all the people. For all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's intent to kill Abner, the son of Ner. Then the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I am weak today." Literally, I have showed restraint. I am showing that I can be a gentle man when I need to be. That's basically what that means. He says, "I am weak today, though anointed king. And these men, the sons of Zeruiah," now remember that's David's sister, so Joab and Abishai are his two nephews, "are too harsh for me. The Lord shall repay the evildoer according to his wickedness." So an amazing thing as this comes to an end in this particular chapter. And it just gets interesting. So now the kingdom has been, you know, technically it's almost been united. But remember, we still have Ishbosheth. Saul's son is still alive, right? But wait a minute. Abner was the true strength behind this. He was the guy, you know, Ishbosheth is the guy that Abner had his hand in and said, "You know, Ishbosheth, you do what I say." "Okay, yes, I'll do what you say." Ishbosheth, can you imagine what's going to go through his mind when he finds out Abner's dead? Because Ishbosheth is a weak leader, but as you will see, he's not even going to get too much of a chance to deal with that. As we get it, we'll get into that next week. So, just A quick reminder as we look at this. We're seeing this man, David, who we've seen that he's been very patient. He's been very, if you will, gentle with his own people. A mighty warrior on the outside. But with God's people, he's a shepherd that watches out for them. He wants to see the nation united. And when it came to being a political leader, the guy, you got to admit that the way he handled this situation was very good. Because this could have split the kingdom and it could have caused a civil war. Because now all of a sudden, the sons or the tribe of Benjamin could have rallied behind Ishbosheth and said, "Let's go get him. They killed Abner. He's one of us." But David did something public. He says, "We're going to have a public procession." David did a very wise political move here. He's brought in Saul's daughter back as his wife. So David's a pretty sharp cookie. But one of the things I think that we need to be reminded of is that as we close this up at the very last sentence of chapter 3, the Lord shall repay. Did you catch that? Listen, I want to assure you of a couple of things. I promise you, people are going to let you down. I promise you, people are going to hurt you. I promise you, even I am going to let you down at some point in our relationship. If you put me on a pedestal, I will fall off of it. I promise you. If you've known me very long, you've already experienced that. Okay? So, people that we are in touch with, our family members are going to hurt us. People that are around us, our brothers and sisters in Christ, are going to let us down. I promise you. Things are going to happen. And so how are we going to handle that? Oh, get even with that punk, Rob. I'll show him. You know, I'll show him. I'll just stop tithing. As if I even know who does. Because I don't. And I don't want to know. So if you're going to use that tact, I mean, I've had people come up to me and say, "You know, you let me down. You didn't return my phone call. So have you noticed what I've done?" "No." "Well, I've stopped tithing, pal." "Whoa." "Well, here's the deal. You know, I'm sorry that I didn't return your phone call. I really do apologize for that, but you have no idea where I've been at all week long. And, you know, if you're going to use your money to, you know, try to control me or to manipulate the situation, go ahead and keep it. Because that really wasn't from the Lord anyway. But I promise you, I'll let you down. I don't mean to hurt you, but it'll happen." And so how are we going to handle that? Are we going to get revenge? Are we going to allow bitterness to build and to brew within our hearts? Where we say, "Well, I'll show that person. They don't talk to me that way. That's never going to happen to me." And we can allow bitterness to begin to brew, and it will turn into a plan of how to get even. And what we're going to do to prove to that person why we're right and they're wrong. We can do that, you guys. I mean, in our flesh, we are fully capable of doing that, aren't we? How many of us have ever done it before? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you didn't raise your hand, you're lying. Because one of the things that I have learned, you guys, over the years, is the Lord shall repay. It's not our job. Sometimes we have to look at and say, "You know what? Okay, how many times has someone not returned my phone call? Or how many times has someone hurt me? Well, but yet at the same time, I know that I've hurt another. How many times have I made a commitment when I forgot or I didn't follow through? But yet, how many times has that happened to me?" You know what? I have found that being like David, extending grace and patience goes a long, long way of bringing unity. I'll be honest, in these last days, I think we need to cut each other a lot more slack than we do. Really. We are way too hard on each other. You know, I've heard, you know, that people say about us Christians that we're the only ones that shoot our wounded. Isn't that a sad thing that people say about us as a Christian? And yet, unfortunately, probably more oftentimes than not, it's true. And yet, if we would just be patient and extend grace and not put so much high expectations upon each other, but just love each other and be patient like David was, we can either be like Joab and Abishai, or we can be like David. And I personally have found that I want to be more like David. Because David was a lot like Jesus, wasn't he? And so for me, when I look at a story like this and I see that how two guys had gotten the flesh and they almost ruined an amazing, you know, work that God was trying to accomplish. And it gets uglier. So by the time David finally takes the throne in a united Israel, it's been a bloodbath to get there. But not by David's hands. And so from me to you, if someone has let you down, if someone has hurt you, if someone has, you know, mistreated you, let it go. Leave it alone. Turn it over to the Lord. Let God take care of it. It's okay. We're going to live through it. Rather, be like Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense, gang? Let the Lord repay. Let him take care of it. It's not your job. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this chapter. What an amazing picture. As we look at King David, we look at what just went on in this chapter. And I pray, Lord, that we would not be people filled with revenge, filled with bitterness. But we would be people, Lord, that are filled with patience, filled with gentleness and restraint, as David was. Be like you, Jesus. That though you were being literally ripped apart, you opened not your mouth. You didn't cry out, "Get them." He cried out, "Forgive them." And so, God, may we follow that example of Jesus. And so tonight, Lord, if there's someone that even now as we're sitting here tonight, if there's someone that we came in here tonight thinking that we had bitterness towards them, they had hurt us or something, may we just let it go right now where you're at. May we just release that person. In fact, right where you're at, if the Lord has put someone on your mind, someone on your heart, someone that has hurt you, who knows, it could be someone 20 years ago. Might have been your mother or your father or your uncle or your cousin. If the Lord has shown you someone that you've carried around bitterness towards, you want to be free? Take that person and say, "Lord, I give them to you. I don't want them to be in control of my life anymore. I give that person to you, Lord. I'm going to let you repay. And now leave them there. And you'll be free." Thank you, Jesus. In your name we pray. Amen.